in the time of Yirmiyahu, we have to say that at that time the Yovel would still be effective. Of course, remember when Yechezkel says it's not going to happen anymore, but in Yirmiyahu's time the Yovel should still be effective. After Yovel Batel v'Navim Estabi Elav Shivatel Elav Elabi, it teaches us she Yirmiyahu Hechziron, right? It teaches us that Jeremiah did bring back the 10 tribes, the Yoshiyahu ben Amon Malach Elehen, and King Josiah, the son of Amon, ruled over them. Dichsiv, as we find written over there, and this is, in the Second Kings, towards the end, we were talking about the reign of Yoshiyahu, is written over there, Vayomer Ma'atun Alos Hashani Ro'eh. All right? They found a tombstone, okay? And they asked the people of the city, what is this tombstone that we see over here? So Vayomer Elov, so they said unto him, Anshei Ovir, the people of the city said unto him, Hakever Yishuelayim, this grave belongs to the man of God, Asher Bo Yehuda, who came from Yehuda, Vayikros Hadvorim Ha'ela, and he said these words, Asher Sisal Amizbeach Beveisel, which these things that would happen on the altar in Beisel. Okay, so So what is the connection between Yoshiyahu and the altar in Beisel? So it teaches us Yoshiyahu Molach Aleihem, that Yoshiyahu reigned over them. Now it's a little bit mixed up over here, so this is what I'm trying to explain to you what happened over here. Where is Beisel? The answer is, it is north of Yerushalayim, okay? North of Yerushalayim. And what happened in Beit El in the days of Yeravim ben Nevat, the man who split the kingdom from King Rehoboam, right? The answer is that he wanted to set up rival temples and prevent the people from going to Yerushalayim to make pilgrimages over there. So he set up two temples, one in Bethel, which would be the southern part of his kingdom, and the other one in Dan, which would be the northern part of his kingdom. It's a biblical expression, from Beersheba to Dan, right, which means from the south up to the north. Okay, so there were these two temples. Now, a prophet came from Yehuda in order to tell King Yeravim ben Nevat that what he was doing in splitting the Jewish people and opening up a temple to rival the temple in Yerushalayim, eventually this is going to come to ruin. Okay? So, here is the picture then. Yoshiyahu is now king of Judah, right? And this is many, many years after the establishment of the temple in Bethel. The prophet died. They buried him, several centuries before, right? But the tradition remained that he was the one who warned that the temple in Bethel would be ruined. And of course, what would happen then? Then the people in Israel would once more become joined with the people in Yehuda, and Yoshiyahu would rule over them. This is the idea. You understand? So that, yes.
The timeline of history here.
This is Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu. Josiah. Yeah.
Yoshiyahu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ruled 50 years or 60 years before the destruction
of the Beis Hamikdash, approximately.
567. then he would have ruled after the...
He ruled in the 600s, right. Let's say about 640 or something like that, okay?
At which point, there were no ten tribes. The ten tribes were somewhere in Assyria.
Yeah. But the truth of the matter is that not every single Jew was exiled from among the ten tribes. I mean, we think that it was so complete, you know. But there were some who were left behind, and they rejoined the kingdom of Yehuda. This is actually what happened, okay? So what we're saying is, you know, that now there was once more a reunification of whoever was left among the ten tribes together with the with the kingdom of Yehuda, okay? And Yoshiyahu was the king who ruled over once more a united kingdom.
Yeah.
Granted, it wasn't destined to last more than just another 50, 60 years or so, but this is what the case was at the time, okay? So obviously then, during those 50, 60 years, there had to be at least what? At least one Yovel that was still being observed. Yeah, this is what the implication is over here.
Did the remainder of the Jews actually physically migrate to the kingdom of Yehuda?
Some migrated and some stayed but became joined, because unfortunately what the Assyrian policy was, they brought in people from the furthest corners of the Assyrian Empire, and, as for example, Kutz, right? And they mingled and they became among the inhabitants of the land, and this is how we have what we call the Kusim that we read about all the time in the Gemara, you know, the Samaritans, okay? All right, one more sentence and that's it. Rav Nachman, Rabbi Mehocha, Rav Nachman got the same idea from a different pasuk. We quoted before Yechezkel's prophecy. So now he has a prophecy from the book of Hosea, which says, "Gam Yehuda shas kotzi loch b'shevi shavus ami." Judah will also bring you a harvest when I return the captivity of my people. In other words, Ribbono Shel Olam promises that the people of Israel will once more be rejoined to the people of Yehuda and become one people once more.
But the thing is, they prophesied
that. Halavai should happen, right?
They've gone so far afield. They started to talk about this woman who was the prophetess.
Yeah.
And they've gone into all these.
Okay, we are on the air. Tonight is the 23rd of January, if I'm not mistaken, in the year 2002. We are now continuing in Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis. And we'll first of all finish the daf tonight and go on with the daf Tesvav. In other words, we're finishing 14b and we'll go on to at least 15a and maybe 15b as well. But we'll see. We shall move. Okay.
We don't ask you too many questions. Right?
That's all right. You're entitled to ask a question too. I mean, I don't want a stifled comment, you know. All right. I want to point out something. That as we return now to the book of Esther, what we'll see, there are going to be 100 other interruptions as yet. But what started off this whole business about prophecy? Does anybody remember?
Prophecy.
Yeah. Why did we suddenly have a mention of 48 men who were prophets and 7 women who were prophets and so on?
Is this an open book exam?
You're welcome to take a look.
The word that was used, that was interpreted to mean prophecy.
Well, actually, it's a little bit more specific.
I know, it's quite more specific.
Yeah, right.
I'm trying to, but somewhere along the line, that there was a discussion about a word, was there not?
Yeah, we've had lots of discussions about words. They always give rise.
Specifically dealing with.
All right, I'll tell you the answer. Okay, at least in my opinion, what the answer
should
be.
Yeah.
We went through a whole list, right? Between Rashi and between what the Gemara has to say. So we went through each and every one. Okay. All right. The answer is that we came across at the beginning of chapter 3 in the Megillah itself, not over here, but, you know, in Megillah's Esther, okay, that, you know, Haman gets permission from Ahasuerus, if you remember, in order to kill the Jews, you know, throughout all the provinces of the king's empire and so on. And not only that, but when Haman makes an offer, you know, to give him money, in order to do it, the king says, it's okay, you can keep the money, it's all right with me. And at that particular point, we had a statement which says that greater, Gedola, Hasoras, Tabas, greater was the fact that the king took off his ring, his signet ring, in order to give to Haman to make the decree official. It did more to get Jews, right, to get back to Yiddishkeit than the 48 prophets among the men and the seven among the women. Okay, right. So that was really the springboard that we had for the
official,
enumeration.
The
right.
act of extinction
right.
was greater than the prophecy.
Right, in order for Jews to get back on the track and to do tshuva, you know, to fast and to put on sackcloth, sackcloth and to pray and so on. So it did more to bring the Jews back to Yiddishkeit than all the prophecies and all the warnings and so on that the prophets had given to the people of Israel. Then, if you remember, we went through a few of the men prophets, not all of them, okay? And then we came to the seven women prophets, okay? You know, Sora was one, and of course Miriam was another one, and Deborah was another one, if you recall, okay? And number six was Huldah, who lived in the days of King Yoshiyahu. But we didn't have number seven. This is where we start with tonight. And of course, who did we say was number seven? Esther.
All right.
So this is where we are right now. Okay? So Esther. Yeah. I'll tell you. It says Esther Dichsiv. Okay? Obed Beis, of course. Okay, in the narrow section, all right, you'll see a tesis that begins with the word igayara. You see it over there? Yeah. So, go to the column and go down about four lines and you'll find it. Esther Dixiv. You see it? Yeah. All right. Esther Dixiv. How do we know that Esther was a prophetess? That's the question. So, the answer is, Vayihi b'yom hashlishi, you know, it's the beginning of chapter 5, you know, because what happened in between, if you recall the sequence. It's a little bit out of sequence to a certain extent over here, but it's in sequence. What I mean by out of sequence, in that we didn't have yet a discussion of some of the psukim in chapter Dalet, okay? Because this is the beginning of chapter Hey. I mean, naturally, what happened in chapter Dalet? The Jews, you know, Mordechai goes to Esther to plead with her that she should plead on behalf of her people, and of course she's afraid, if you remember. And so finally she consents, you know, to go, no matter what may befall her, okay? And we'll come, Mirtz Hashem, to that too tonight, I hope, okay? But why do we have Esther mentioned over here right now at the beginning, and the quotation that they quote from chapter 5, the beginning? The answer is very simple. It's because, inasmuch as we mentioned the other six prophetesses, so now we want to go to Esther as well, and to find out, how do we know, where is there a pasuk in the Bible that says that she was a prophetess? Okay? This is the idea. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a biblical source in order to prove that she was a prophet.
Anything.
Nope. Nevertheless, they want to establish the fact that she was a prophetess based upon this work. All right. Yeah, you have to use a grubber finger. There's no question.
They come from left field.
Right. So it's written, okay, that came to pass on the third day, that Esther put on royalty. I'm translating it literally, okay? So the Gemara says, "Big day malchus min boyle." What do you mean? She didn't put on royalty. She should have put, what it should say is that she put on royal garments. Yeah, big day Malchus, royal garments. Ella. So why does it say that she put on, in other words, she was clothed, in other words, with royalty? The answer is, she lavashta ruach hakodesh, that it was the Holy Spirit that clothed her. She was clothed, right, with the Holy Spirit. Ksiv, how do we know? So it says, ksiv hocho, because here it says, what, yilbash, right? She put on something, right? And then we have a different quotation. This happens to be a reference to King David, and one of the people, one of the captains of his army, whose name was Amasai. It said in the Ruach Lovsha Amasai, okay, that the Spirit clothed Amasai. Rosh HaPasuk is Rosh HaShalishim, who is the head of the officers. And he said to David, Shalom lecho, v'shalom nezrecho, peace unto you, shalom, peace unto all that help you. And then it's written by Kablaim David, by Yitnim Rosh, that David received them and made them heads of the regiment, so to speak. Okay.
Was he a general?
He was a general, right. He came to greet David, and David made him an officer. Okay. But the point is, if Ruach Lofsha, as a Masai, right, and in other words, the things that he said to King David was spelled with what? With the Holy Spirit, with the Ruach HaKodesh. So you have the idea of Ruach, right? Spirit, the Holy Spirit. And at the same time, you have the idea of being clothed. All right, so therefore, this proves what? This proves then that Esther was clothed with the Holy Spirit. In other words, that made her a prophetess. Okay? Now, we've spoken about the seven prophetesses, and among them, of course, if you remember, one of them was Devorah, and another one was Huldah. Okay, of course, we spoke about some of the others, too. I mean, like Miriam, what was her greatness, if you remember? You know, the fact that she prophesied what? That the person who would save the people of Israel would be born, right? And then we saw, you know, with, for example, Abigail, that she recognized that David was going was a king and so on, and she saved. She helped. Right, right,
right. Doing the wrong thing.
Right, right. Okay. So yeah, she got the hint that she wouldn't mind being Mrs. David if her husband would go someplace else. Right. Okay. So right. Okay. So at any rate, Rav Nachman says the following. He says, Lo Yoye Hirusa Benoshe. He says, it's not right for women to be big shots, to be pompous, or something like that. Rav Nachman says that. It's a statement.
It's not becoming.
Yeah, it's not becoming. All right. And he says, Tate Noshe Yehir and Havyan. There were two women who were very, very proud in the sense, you know, that they were filled with pride, not in a good sense, according to him, but in a not such nice place. Yes, the Sanyon Shmaihu, and he says, you know, and their names were not very, very, not very, very liked, okay?
Repulsive.
Yeah, repulsive, whatever you want to say, okay. Chado Shmo Ziburto, the Chado Shmo Karkashto. One of them is called Ziburta, and the other one is called Karkushta. Okay? Now, who is Ziburta? Ziburta is a bee. Now, naturally, what is the Hebrew? It's an Aramaic word, Ziburta. Okay. What is the Hebrew word for a bee? The answer is Devorah.
Devorah.
So, who is he referring to? Referring to Devorah.
Devorah, yeah.
Yeah, it says Ziburta, Sibwa. Concerning her, it is written, Vatishlach Vatikra Levorach, right? She sent and she called for Barak, okay? The Elohi, he, Leos Legabe. But she didn't go to him. Instead, she insisted that he should come to her.
Who is so, Barak? Who is
Barak ben Avinoam. He was the man who she asked that he should be the general of the Jewish people, to rally the Jewish people to fight against the Yavid Melch Canaan and Sisra and so on, you know, who were oppressing the people of Israel. Okay? This is what we find, you know, in chapter 4 and 5, right, of...
Haftorah.
Yeah, we're going to be reading the Haftorah this week.
Yeah.
About Devorah. Devorah Isha, Devorah Isha, Lapidos. Remember we had Lapidos? Why was she called the wife of Lapidos?
I don't know.
Forgot already.
I forgot.
Yeah, because she used to make wicks to light the lights in the Mishkan and Shiloh.
Oh,
right, right. Because Lapidus, I told you, means a torch,
a
literally.
Torch, right.
Okay. All right. So, that's... He's criticizing Devorah, you know, for her pride. Okay? And how about Chulda? So we see Karkushta. The question is, what is Karkushta in Aramaic? The answer is that it's a weasel, or, you know, some kind of a wise animal, right? Weasel. Okay. Ksivva, concerning God, it is written, you know, he wants to show the fact, you know, that she also demonstrated, you know, that she was too proud in order to show the proper respect to the king. It says, Imru la ish, he says, tell the man. Now, you have to remember again, what was the circumstance? King Yoshiyahu and his high priest Hilkiyahu, right? They found a copy of the Sefer Torah in the Beis HaMikdash. And apparently things had degenerated to such an extent that people had forgotten what the Torah was like, okay? So when he found it, he didn't know exactly what should he do. So Chulda was around, and she had a prophet, you know, she was called Chulda Hanaviah, right? So he sent people to her, delegates, right, to ask, you know, what should be done. So she answers, tell the man. She didn't say tell the king. You understand? She said, Imru lo ish, velo amro, Imru la melech. So in other words, she showed disrespect towards the king himself, which showed, you know, that she was kind of haughty. Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
David's time?
Oh, no. He was among the last kings of Judah. He was roughly about the fourth or fifth from the end. Yeah. Yoshiyahu ben, his father is called Amon. Yoshiyahu ben Amon. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, as much as Rav Nachman made this statement, so he's on a roll. Okay? So we have another statement by Rav Nachman. He says, you know, Chulda mibnei bonav shel Yehoshua Hoyesa. He says, you know who Chulda was? She was from among the descendants, from among literally the sons of Yehoshua. Okay? Ksiv hocha, here it is written. In other words, in the Melachim Beis, it's written about her husband, it was Ben Karchas. Okay? It's a hard name to pronounce, you know. Karchas. Okay? Right? Uksiv hasam, and there in reference to Yehoshua, it's written, Besivnas Cheres. In other words, this is the place where Yehoshua made his home, and so on. All right. So you'll say, what is the connection between them? So the answer is, you have to look at the letters. You have double ches, and a resh, and a samach, right? In Karchas, okay? And in Tibnas Cheres, what do we have? A ches, a resh, and a samach. So therefore, we have to say, it's not by accident, right? That you have, you know, a similarity between one and another, but it is to show us what? That she was descended from the person who lived in Timnath Serach, namely Yehoshua, and that's the reason why her husband was called Chorchas. Of course, you can ask another question. If her husband was Chorchas, so we're giving a yichus for the husband. Right. Well, how does it
come to her?
Right.
Yeah.
So the answer is, okay, she also had yichus. She also had yichus.
Another threat.
Right, okay. Now, this is probably... all right. Immediately, there was an objection made to this statement. Okay? remember, one was Rav Nachman, right? He was the one who made the statement that she was descended from Yehoshua. So, Esmei Rav Eino Sava. So, the Rav Nachman. Rav Eino Sava, the old man, right, asked the following question of Rav Nachman. In other words, he challenged him. He says, you know what? I have a tradition that says what? It says, Shmona Nevi'im, Vehem Kohanim, that there were eight prophets who were also at the same time Kohanim, Yotzu Me Rochav HaZona. They descended from Rochav the Zona. Of course, Zona, if you're familiar with Yiddish, yeah, you know, Zona means a prostitute, right? A harlot, okay. Which is the usual translation that we give for her, but, you know, sometimes we find that, for example, in the Targum, they didn't like to call her Rachav the harlot, because in the final analysis, you know, she saved the two spies whom Yehoshua had sent in order to find out what was going on in Jericho, yeah, so that, the, you know, the Jews would know what to do, right?
Right.
So, as a result, they gave a different translation. The Targum gives a translation for Hazona. He says, Pundekois, which means the innkeeper. Okay? The innkeeper.
Out of that's all.
Okay.
Isn't that used that way, though, at other times, Hazona as an innkeeper?
No.
We don't see that?
No. But you see, he derives it.
There's something in the Torah that we come across.
No. Normally in the Torah, when you have the word zona or zoneh, then it means either prostitute or to stray from the right path. Right. So, I just wanted to say, I mean, why does the Targum translate it as innkeeper, besides the fact that, you know, that they want to put a good spin on it? But the answer is, because zona, they say, comes the word mazon.
Yeah,
Mazon is food, right?
Yeah.
So that therefore she's the one who supplies food when you're on the road and you have to stay over. Okay. So, yes.
In office,
reading the story of Rachel, what do you feel
personally? Feel
she was an innkeeper or a prostitute?
Both.
Maybe both.
All right, whatever. But at any rate, you have to see, I mean, that they look upon her in a very, very good light, even though they call her Rachel HaZona, which was what the Bible calls her, okay? So, you see that they're trying to say that she may have been Rachel HaZona, but nevertheless, her descendants turned out to be fine, upstanding people.
Right.
As, for example, according to this statement, there were eight prophets who were Kohanim, who were descendants from her. Okay, and they are listed. The Elohein, who are they? Neriah, Baruch, Sariah, Machsiah, Yirmiah, Chilkiah, Chadamel, and Shalom. Okay. All of them, you know, their names, I have to tell you, where do we find their various names? First of all, they're not listed together normally, okay? Okay. All right, very good. You're right. I mean, all I started to say is that we don't find that the eight of them are listed together any place because they lived at different times.
Mm.
Okay? That the first... first of all, you have Baruch ben Neriah. Okay, so you notice that there's Neriah and Baruch. Okay, who is Baruch ben Neriah? He happened to be the personal secretary, so to speak, of Yirmiyahu. He was the one who wrote down the prophecies of Yirmiyahu. Okay, and then when the king, Yochanan, did not want to listen to Yirmiyahu's prophecy, you know, that he'd better mend his way and make peace with the Babylonians, in order to save the country from destruction, he took Yirmiyahu's prophecies, and Yirmiyahu gave him a copy, you know, of his prophecies, and he threw it into the fire to destroy it. Okay? But Baruch was able to remember and to make another copy, you see, of it, so that the prophecies survived the original ones being burnt in the fire. Okay, so now, Saraya Machsaya, we find that mentioned in the Divrei Hayomim, okay, among the, you know, the people who came up with Ezra and so on and so forth. Then, of course, we have Yirmiyah. And who is Yirmiyahu? That's Yirmiyahu, the prophet. And Chilkiyah, or Chilkiyahu, who was his father. And as I said, this is the name of the high priest in the time of Yoshiyahu. Okay? And then we have Hanamel and Shalom, as which David remembered, you know, was, we find the connection, that Yerushalayim was surrounded by the troops of Babylonia. And, you know, the fall of Yerushalayim certainly was imminent for anybody who could read the handwriting on the wall, okay? And at this particular moment, Yirmiyahu transacts a real estate deal. And, you know, he buys the field, and Hanamel and so on and so forth. And then the question is, what is he trying to bring out with that? And what he brought out is a very famous pasuk, a very famous prophecy. It says, the day will yet come when people will buy houses and build houses in this land, and fields will be sown and everything else. In order to show what? That even if Yerushalayim, even if would we be destroyed, but the Jews would return and they would rebuild Eretz Yisrael. So that there was a very symbolic thing. And we also learned, you know, the whole transaction that took place, how they wrote out a copy and then they put it into a clay jar, and then it was sealed and everything else with witnesses and things like that and so on. So that we have an idea of how a real estate transaction was carried on in the days of Yirmiyahu as a result of that. All right.
Are we talking about, is that Jeremiah we're talking about?
Yeah. Yirmiyahu is Jeremiah, of course. So he and his father, all right. So they say that, obviously, I mean, if Chilkiyah was a descendant, so Jeremiah was a descendant of Rahab. Mm-hmm. So what he's saying is, we have this tradition that says that these eight people, all of whom were prominent people, and all of whom were Kohanim, they were descended from Rahab the Zona. Understand? Rabbi Yehuda adds the following. He says, "Af Chulda Hanaviya mipnei bonehu sherechav zona hoyisam." She too, he says, was a descendant from Rachav the Zona. So the fact, you know, that, for example, Chulda's husband was, yeah, but she was also descended from him. How do we know that? Because it's written, "Ksiv Hocha." In reference to her husband, it says that he was Ben Tikva, the son, literally, of Tikva, okay? Because Tikva, you know, normally means hope. But in the book of Yehoshua, where we have this incident of Yericho, there we see that the word Tikva has a different meaning. Let's see. Okay, Siv Hossam, in the case of that second chapter in Yehoshua, it's written, Es Tikvas Chut Hashoni. In other words, this thread of scarlet, this was the sign that this is where Rachav lived, and the two spies promised her that they would spare her life and the lives of the members of her family if they would gather in her house, or her apartment over there, which was located on the wall of the city, actually. But she was to put this thread of red down, and that would be a sign that they would know exactly that this was her house and rescue her before anything else happened. Okay?
How is this relevant? Why is it important to prove these people either were or weren't
okay
good people?
The answer is, in my mind, okay, that what they wanted to do was to show that even though Rav Nachman made a nasty statement concerning what? The haughtiness of Devorah and of Chulda, but nevertheless, the fact is that Chulda had Yichus, not just her husband was descended from Yeshua, but she too was also descended from him. All right? And since we're talking about Yehoshua, so we have to take into account Rachel. Okay? So this is how the whole thing, comes together. All right. So at any rate, Omalei, so he said unto him, Aina Sava. No, Aina Sava, he says to him. And of course, this is Rabbi Nachman talking again, right? The army law, and there are those who say that he didn't say to him, Aina. Somebody said to him, Pasya Uchma, which means literally black jar. But he meant black jar. Black jar. But he meant it as a compliment. According to the according to the commentators, he called them that as a sign of respect for the fact that he had a good head on his shoulders, and he remembered all kinds of statements that had been made by the sages.
Like a black jar, no. It was solid, apparently.
Because we find that in some other places too, that it's a compliment, okay? He says, Mini Minoch, between me and you, tis time Shmato. We'll work out, the solution to, these statements that we've had. And what is it? The Igaira Finasri Hoshua. What happened was, he says, that Rachav the Zonah converted to Yiddishkeit, and then Yehoshua married her after she was converted. So, God's fine. All right, we'll take a look in a minute at the Tosfos that we have over here, which you see begins with the Gaira of Nasri Yehoshua. We'll take a look for a moment. But, all right, let's look at it now, and then we'll come back to the bottom of the daf. All right, so the Gaira of Nasri Yehoshua. Tosfos says, Kasha. Kasha means, it's hard to understand, right? It's difficult. How come that what? That Yeshua should marry her? Don't we say in chapter that begins with Ha'orel, the Nivomas, okay? With Ha'afilu Begeruson, Lestahu Chasonus. Which means that even if they become converted, the Canaanites cannot contract marriage with the Jewish people. It's the Canaanites that we're talking about, as we'll see in a second, okay?
Where was that written?
It's written that, from these seven nations of Canaan, Jewish people are not to intermarry with them. And which means that that the men were not to take their daughters, and likewise that Jewish daughters should not be married to them, even if they converted, right? Because they were supposed to be theoretically destroyed, if you remember, okay? Yeah,
we didn't do
right. So Tosfos, quotes and says, how could it when there's an Isser, he says, that they should get married. So the Tzorach Leimah, so we have to say, Shelo HaYisrael Meshiva Amomim, Ela Misha Amomim. So we have to say that she was not actually one of the, person from the seven nations that were prohibited, but rather she came, some other nation. Uvas Lagosham, and she came in order to live in Yericho, and so that therefore she was not subject, in other words, to this prohibition. Okay?
Against marrying.
Right. The Yesh Mefarshim, however, there's another expression, there's another interpretation according to Tosfos. It says, Sheratzu Lomar, what they really wanted to say by saying, that he married her, is Shalohu's Haru Allah to Losis Chatein, that the people of Israel were not warned concerning, not to intermarry with the Canaanites, Ad the Achshon Nichtesu Loras, until they actually had what? Until they actually had entered Eretz Yisrael. Okay. The Zayna Damin B'Midrash, right, and the Sinim B'Ol Hizkayim B'Midrash. It says, but this contradicts a statement that we have in the Midrash, which says that the Nesinim, those are the people who came from a certain area, they were Canaanites, but they came in order to become converted in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, Kimo B'Yimei Yehoshua, even as in the days of Yehoshua. But Yehoshua, we know that these people, they disguised themselves. They said that they came from a far off country. They had heard, you know, about Israel, and that they wanted to, you know, to make sure to make a treaty of peace with Yehoshua and the people of Israel. Afterwards, they discovered that these guys were coming from the nearby town. So, but they were smart enough, you know, in order to avoid being destroyed, because once Yehoshua, the Jewish people, had given their pledge, you know, the treaty never to harm them or anything like that. So in that particular case, right. Okay. Well, okay. The Afal Bichayim, but nevertheless, this we learned in the Gemara in Kedushin, Lo Hutra Lavoba Kahal, they were not permitted to intermarry with the Jews. Eloha Yuchot V'yetzim Shavimayim. Right. But they were assigned to be hewers of wood and drawers of water, right? So Alma the Kodim Shaobras Hayadain, the source was Alehem. So we see that the warning was already given. All right. But at any rate, as you can see, Tosfos is struggling with this, right? And so they gave two possible answers, but the problem is that you always have Midrashim that contradict this, you see. All right. So you take your pick and as they gave us, you know.
Right, they made their point.
Well, because Jericho was a city of Canaan.
But I mean, they also, they could have been Hivites or, you know.
No, they weren't. Anyway, Chiti is also. Chiti, Amori, Aprizi, Aknani, etc. You know, they were all among the Shivas HaAmamim. Right. Yeah. That's what we say every day, right? Because my business says, Haknani, Achitu, Amor, Apriz, Haimuzi, Hagoshi, right? These are all, you know, people who lived over there, and we were not to intermarry with them, okay? Yeah.
All of those people died out entirely, did they not? They disappeared.
Definitely, they disappeared. There's a Gemara we find several places speaking about that. Sancheirav, you know, King Sennacherib, Sennacherib, we call him in English, but Sancheirav in Hebrew, okay? He was the king of Assyria who came, and if you remember, he defeated the northern kingdom, right? He tried to also destroy Yerushalayim, but at that point he didn't succeed, okay? But the policy of the Assyrians was to take the people of a captured land and push them to the furthest reaches of the Assyrian Empire, and by the same token to bring in people from other areas within the Assyrian Empire, right, and then settle them, you know, in the place, okay. So the Gemara says, you know, that Bor Vilbel is called this. When Sennacherib came, so he mixed up all the nations, so that therefore we don't know who is a Canaanite, who is not, and therefore it's permitted to marry anybody who is not born Jewish, provided, of course, that they convert to Yiddish, right? Okay?
Because of that, right. Because of what he did.
It's all mixed up, right? So for that we have to thank him, okay? All right. But, you know, they're not finished. The last line over here says to me, Havu le Zara le Yehoshua. So tell me, did Yehoshua actually have any children? The Hawksiv, don't we have a pasuk that says in Divrei Hayomim where they're giving a genealogy of the tribe of Menashe, you know, starting with Menashe and going through various people. So they finally wind up and it says, Nun Beno and Yehoshua Beno. In other words, his son was Nun, and his son was Yehoshua. So, and then it stops at that particular point. So, therefore, they ask the following question. So how can you say that he had children when there is no mention made of any children to Yehoshua? You understand? This is the question. So they say, Bonei Lehavalei. All right, so Taka, he did not have sons. That's why you don't see it listed. But Bonton Havalei, he did have daughters. Okay. All right, now we're ready to go on the next page. Megillah Tesvav, Amud Aleph. Okay. Yeah, oh, we got a lot of stuff over here. I'm not sure I'm going to finish the slide tonight. But we'll do whatever we can. All right.
That's that one.
Yeah.
This must be the next one.
Yeah. It begins with the word Bishlamon. Do you have it? I have it in order over here.
The word what?
Bishlamon. At the top over there. Here it is. This is it. Okay. Yeah. Bishlam.
Right.
Yeah, right here. Okay, Goldie. You want to pass it down? Right. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So now the Gemara asks the following question. It says, Bishlamo inu mifarshe. Hello, Hasayim in Nalav. Right. We know. May as well be recorded for posterity. Okay, you said that you thought that a prophet was somebody who predicted the future. This is a misreading of the role of a prophet. This was only one of the possible activities of a prophet, but essentially the prophet was chosen to be, by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, to be his spokesman, so to speak.
Yeah, but how do you tell the difference between a true prophet and a false prophet?
The Devarim, we have precisely that question, right? How do we know, they say, whether the man who speaks in the name of God really is representing the word of God? Okay, so there it says, if he says something that is obviously false, then you know that he's not a true prophet. If he says something that he says is going to pass and that thing never comes to pass, so you know that he's not a true prophet. Okay? But this is, as I said, only one aspect of being a prophet. Essentially, the role of the prophet was in order to guide the people of Israel, that if, for example, they see that people are sinning to warn them and also to encourage them to do tshuva and to do the right thing, so that it will be for the benefit of the individual and also for the benefit of the people of Israel. And in the case of some more of the prophets, it was also to preach to the people of Israel that should disaster befall the people of Israel, golus, exile, then in that case there is always the hope that Jews will once more return to Israel and they would rebuild it. So these were functions of the Nevi'im. Okay? All right. So, the Gemara on Tesvav Amud Aleph right now, 15a, says, Bishlamo inhu mefarshe. All right. We know that in certain cases the names actually are mentioned in the Bible as what? As being prophets. Okay, let's take a look at the Rashi on the top of the page. Yirmiyahu v'Hananel, we know about that, about Jeremiah and the Hananel. Dichsiv, because it's written, Vayovo Eli, Hananel ben Dodi, Hananel, who was the son of my uncle, came in order to talk to me, right? Kidvar Hashem, and he came even as God had told him to do it. So what do we see from this? We see that he was inspired by God. In other words, he was also a Navi. If he got the message from God to come and to go visit Yirmiyahu. Okay? Now, Baruch Israel. So, Matsignu we have found, says Rashi, Shoyu Talmide Yirmiyahu, that they were disciples of Yirmiyahu. Baruch, in the case of Baruch, the Siv, it's written, Mipiv Yikorei Elias Hadvarim Ha'il, that he would read unto me these words. In other words, the Ani Kosev HaSefer Bin Yom. In other words, Baruch says, he would read or he would call out, you know, the words to me. In other words, he would, you know, give orally his prophecies, right? And I would write it on the Sefer. In other words, of course, in those days, it doesn't mean the book, but, you know, write it on, the, let's say, the scroll. Bin Yom, with ink, so that, you know, it would be preserved. All right? And who was Sraya? It says, Sraya besoch Sefer Yirmiyahu. We find it written in Yirmiyahu, in one of the later chapters, happened to be chapter 11, that Adavor Asher Tzivo Yirmiyahu is Sraya ben Machasya. Okay? So this is the prophecy which Yirmiyahu commanded Sraya the son of Machasya. Okay. Umotzino, says Rashi, and we also we find the Talmidei Neviim, Shehoyu Neviim. Okay? We find that there were disciples of the Neviim who were also Neviim in their own life. Because it's written, Nocho Ruach Eliyahu al Elisha. Okay? What happened? We find that the spirit of Eliyahu literally rested on Elisha. In other words, Elisha was endowed. He was not the son, right? But nevertheless, he was the Talmud of Eliyahu. So from this we see that a prophet could pass on his prophetic vision or his prophetic spirit. His prophetic spirit, you know, to his disciples.
Didn't we learn that they actually had schools?
Yes.
Of training. So
yeah, well, I don't know that they had training, but there were certainly schools of prophets,
yes,
who had, you know, a leading prophet as their master, right. Vihoshua, and of course, what about Joshua? He says, Talmud Moshe, he was the disciple of Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? Ulekamon, and afterwards it says, Tanya Bivraisa, we learned from the Bivraisa, he says, that Boruch ben Nerios, Raya ben Machasya, right? That these people, and also Daniel, Mordechai, Bechagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Kulon Isnavu, Mishnah, Shtayim, Lidoriyon. All of them were activist prophets during the days, during the second year of the reign of King Darius. Okay? So, from this we see that all these people then were in the, were mentioned as being prophets. But the Gemara says, El Av Hasayhu Ben Halot. But how do we know that their fathers also were prophets? So he says, Kidu Ula. This is in accordance with a statement made by Ula. What did Ula say? The Omer, he said, the Omer Ula, he said, Kol Mokon, Sheshmo V'Shem Oviv Ben Avius, that wherever we find that a prophet's name appears, and also the name of his father, right? Then in that particular case, Biyodua, we know definitely Shehu Novi Ben Novi. Okay? That he is a prophet and the son of a prophet. Okay.
Who is Ula?
Ula was one of the great teachers of the Gemara in Babylonia. He's a Babylonian scholar, Ula. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, Ula lived quite a few centuries after. Okay? All right. But he was one of the outstanding scholars, Chachamim, you know.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
That, you know,
yes.
Just you mentioned.
Pardon me? Ula in the Galil? Maybe, I don't know, I never heard of it.
Did the Jews in Babylonia stay, marry with him, their own people?
Of course.
They were able to do that.
Yes, they a tremendous number of Jews were exiled to Babylonia, and
so
as a result, the Jewish community still, you know, the Jewish, right. However,
they married out of Israel.
It was a different story. However, in Eretz Israel, when people came back from Babylonia in order to resettle Eretz Israel, we find that Ezra had to wage a campaign against Jews who had intermarried with Goyim.
That were not converted.
That was the situation that had taken place.
He wants those marriages annulled.
That is correct. Absolutely. Right. All right. So, getting back to our text over here, all right, so if we have a prophet whose name appears and also the name of his father, according to Ulla, then it indicates that both father and son were prophets.
So the father was a prophet, the son would be a prophet.
Yeah. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But this is a statement on the page, okay? All right. Now, what if we have... okay, Shmo. We have the prophet's name, but below Shemoviv, but we don't find his father's name mentioned, then in that case, Biyadua Shehu Navi, then we know that he is a prophet, below Ben Navi, but he is not the son of a prophet. His father was not a prophet. Okay? Shmo, if we find his name, Mishem Iro, the name of the city where he came from, Meforosh, you know, it's stated specifically, then Biyadua, from this we know, Shehu Be'oso Ha'ir. Okay, then we know that he came from that particular city, and of course the implication is that maybe he also prophesied within that city. Okay, but Shemo, if we find the name of the prophet below Shemiro, but not the name of the city where he prophesied, then Biyodo Shehum Yerushalayim. Then in that particular case, we know that he has to be a prophet who prophesied in Yerushalayim. Okay. Nisa, we learned. Kol sesumin, if we know about a certain person, and there's no mention made about what kind of deeds they did, we don't know. But nevertheless, then the pasuk mentions something that one of them did, and it praises them for it, the Shevach, right? Then, in that particular case, Kigon, is for example, Devar Hashem Asher Hoya El Tefanya Ben Kushi Ben Gedalia. Okay? The word of the Lord, which came to Tefanya, the son of Kushi, the son of Gedalia. Okay? Then the Yodu, in that case, where we name all these people, we know Shehut Tzadik Ben Tzadik. Then we know that he is a righteous person, the son of a righteous person. V'chol sheporat lecha kosov b'yecho behem l'gnai. But wherever we have a case where something derogatory is mentioned concerning them, kagon, as for example, v'yehi b'churish hashviyi, it came to pass in the seventh month, boy Yishmael ben Nesanya ben Elishama, that Yishmael the son of Nesanya, the son of Elishama, came, and what did he do? He was the one who assassinated Gedalia. So in that case, Biyodua, we know that in that particular case, Shehu Rosha ben Rosha, he is a wicked person, and he's the son of a wicked person. Okay, let's see what time is it now. All right, we'll do maybe a couple more lines and we'll call it night. Okay? Okay. Other Rab Nachman said, Malachi ze Mordechai. He says, you know, we have a prophet by the name Malachi, but you know who he was, really? He's really Mordechai, he says. So, Valoma Nikro Shmo Malachi. So why is he called Malachi? And so what does Malachi mean? Means literally my messenger. No, my messenger. Right, and the word for an angel also is the same word as for messenger, okay? All right. So, Valoma Nikro Shmo Malachi. So in that case, why is Mordechai called Malachi? Shehoyo Mishneh LaMelech. Because he was second to the king. In other words, he was like a malach who has a higher category. So this is why they also called him malachi. This is, of course, a statement made by Rav Nachman. So they asked the kasha. They say, Borach ben Neviyah, Srayah ben Maasayah, right? B'Daniel, Mordechai, Bilshon, Rechagah, Zechariah, malachi. We just quoted that pasuk just a few moments ago, right? To say that what? That Baruch ben Neviyah, and Sraya the son of Maasiah, and Daniel, and Mordechai, and Bilshon, and Haggai, and Zechariah, and Malachi, right? They all prophesied in the second year of Daryavish, right? So he says to Yuchta, that's a kash on you. Okay? So in other words, how could you say it when it's written specifically that he is a different person? He's not Manochi. Manochi is separate from
Mordechai.
Okay. Okay. So Tanya, we have a different tradition. Omer Rav Yeshua ben Korcho. Rav Yeshua ben Korcho said, Malochi, he says, Ezra, he says. Malochi is Ezra. Okay? V'chachomim oimrim, Malochi Shmoy. And the sages say that his name was really Malochi. All right, what is the connection between Ezra and Malochi? So Omer Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says there is a connection. Ms. Tabri says it makes sense. Kiman de Omer, in accordance with the one who said that Malochi ze Ezra, Dichsiv binavirs Malochi, because we find, for example, in the prophecy of Malochi, it's written over there, Bogdo Yehuda, in other words, Yehuda has been, you know, the people of Yehuda, or the kingdom of Yehuda has been unfaithful, V'soevon esesobi Yisrael v'Yerushalayim, and an abomination has occurred in Israel and Yerushalayim, Ki chilel Yehuda kodesh Hashem Moshe Ohev, because Yehuda has profaned the holiness of God who loved him. Uvoal bas el Nechor. And what did he do? And he married, literally, the daughter of a foreign nation. Okay, so in other words, Malachi there is doing what? He is, right, he's talking against intermarriage, right? Uman Ifrish Noshim Nochrios, and who was the one who eventually brought about the separation of Jewish husbands, you know, from their non-Jewish wives? Ezra. Ezra. Dichsiv, as we find the pasuk, Vayan Shechanya ben Yechiel, Yivnei Elom, right? One of these people who had intermarried and who was a leader of the Jewish people, by the name of Shechanya ben Yechiel, and he was actually he came from Elam. Elam is one of the Persian areas where the capital of Shushan Abir was located. Okay. By Yomali Ezra, and he said to Ezra, "Anachnu mo'alnu b'Eloheinu." Right. We have sinned against our God. Literally, we have trespassed against God. Vanoshev noshim nachrias, by having foreign women literally settled in our homes. In other words, by marrying foreign women. Okay. All right, we shall stop at this particular point tonight and continue Mirza Hashem next week at this point. So we are now on Tesvav Omid Aleph, and we will continue. Okay. Tonight is the 30th of January in the year 2002. We are now continuing from where we left off last week, in the middle of Megillah, Daf Tesvav, Omid Aleph. In other words, 15a, if you're going to use the English terminology. Okay? We now have a Gemara which says, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis have taught, Arba Noshim Yefefios Hayugo Elam. There were four beautiful women in the world. Doesn't mean simultaneously, but it means that if you read, you know, the Bible, so you come across the story of four very beautiful women. Sarah, the Abigail, Rachav, the Esther. Okay?
Who's Rachav?
Rachav, okay. Remember the story in the second chapter of Sefer Yehoshua, that Joshua sent spies, secretly two spies, in order to find out what was doing in the city of Jericho, and their lives were in danger because word had come to the king of Jericho that there were two Jewish spies in the city, and so they searched everywhere and they came to Rachav, and she had hidden them so that they were not able to find them. And We mentioned her before. We said that she is referred to in our literature as Rachav Hazona, which, as we said, literally means, you know, that she was a harlot. But those who want to be kind, they say, and this follows actually the Targum calls it Pundakris, which means literally the hotel keeper, okay? The innkeeper, okay? She was an innkeeper. But,
now, when they're talking beautiful,
yeah.
Do they mean in character or do they mean more than...
Okay, what they mean is that they want to use very polite language, okay? We have an important lesson that we learn right from the story of Noah. Noah takes animals. How many animals does he take? So it says that he takes, you know, he takes seven of the animals. Of course, it means seven pairs, okay? Seven pairs of animals which are tahor. In other words, they're clean, tahora, okay? But he takes two, and it doesn't say two unclean, you know, two pairs of unclean animals. It says two of animals which are not clean. So in other words, instead of trying to use a word which is
negative,
pejorative, whatever adjective you're looking for, right? So we try to have what we call Lashon Nekiya. In other words, you should have polite language, okay? So again, with Rachav Hazona, you know, they were not happy about the fact that she was, in all probability, a harlot. So, therefore, the Targum, which is the Aramaic translation, uses the word which means innkeeper. And there is some justification for it, in that Zona, according to this opinion, is related to the word Zab, Hazon is Ha'olam, Mazon, in other words, the word which means food. And we praise God, you know, Hazon to Olam, who sustains his world with food. You know, he provides the food for this, for all creation and so on. So, that's the justification for it. Okay. So, at any rate, she is listed among the four very, very beautiful women mentioned in the Bible. Okay. If you'll take a look at the Tosfos, at the very top of the page on the left over there, Tosfos has a question over there. It says, Arba Noshim Yefefios Hoyevoelam, right? That there were four beautiful women in the world. It says, kosher. You know what kosher means?
Right.
It's difficult. No. Kosher means hard. It's difficult. Yeah. Difficult to understand. In other words, why? How come that he didn't mention Eve? Okay? The Ho'amrinun, because we say the Perek Cheskas Kabatim, in the chapter Cheskas Kabatim, which happens to be a chapter in Bava Basra, it says that Zorah lifnei Chava kekof lifnei Adam, which means that Sarah is beautiful as she was. If you compare her to Chava, it would be like a monkey compared to a human being. Very strong thing.
Who was the monkey, though?
Huh?
Who was the monkey?
Sarah would be the monkey in comparison to the beauty of Eve.
So Eve was so beautiful.
Exactly, right, right. It's an interesting statement, right. Okay, it was all the time. He said that, whoever the author of that particular one. Okay.
He didn't sign it, though.
Right. So Tosfos says, Yes, Loma. However, maybe we can explain it in this way. That he listed among the beautiful women over here only those who are actually born of a human being. Whereas Chava was not born literally in a normal way, right? She was created out of the right, out of the rib of Adam, right? Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay, you ask a legitimate question, but I have to answer you that whoever is the author of this statement, these were the women that he singled out. Okay.
How about
I mean, I can't have tightness to him. I don't know him personally.
Everyone in the world is going to be insulted now.
Okay.
Well, they're not around to complain.
Right. All right. So, of course, the question is, okay, Sarah How do we know that Sarah was a beautiful woman? The answer is Abraham, you know, he's afraid that she's going to be taken into the harem of Pharaoh and so on. So he says, you know, now I know, he says, that you are a beautiful woman. I don't know how come he didn't know before that, but now he suddenly realizes how beautiful she is. Okay. As far as Abigail is concerned, we already discussed her on a previous page. If you remember, she flashed her ankles or something at David, and David became full of lust. So obviously she must have had something, right?
Pretty
ankles. Yeah, okay.
What's that?
Pretty ankles, yeah. All right, now who is the other one? Well, Rachel will discuss in a second, but as I said, Rachel was the, she's the one who is mentioned in the second chapter of the book of Joshua, and by tradition, another, she had to be a beautiful one. Period. Okay. And finally, Esther. Yes, now, when it comes to Esther, all right, we know that Esther was a beautiful woman. How do we know that she was beautiful? Because the king desired her, right? The king loved her above all the other women, correct? But, if you remember, there was one person who said, she also had a chesaron, as we would say. In other words, there was something not so perfect in her appearance. Amanda Omar Esther Yerakrokas, the one who says that Esther was Yerakrokas, right? Then in that case, he says, Mapik Esther. So in that case, take out Esther from the statement, Umahayo Vashti, and put in Vashti instead. That Vashti was beautiful. Okay.
The first queen.
But she was a beautiful woman. Okay. At any rate, what is this business about Esther being Yerach Rokas? Well, as I told you, the word Yerach Rok in the Bible means greenish.
Greenish.
You know, Yarok in Hebrew means green. So that, in other words, according to, if we use a derogatory interpretation, it means that she had a sallow complexion, a greenish complexion, but nevertheless, in the eyes of Ahasuerus, she was beautiful, okay? Her demeanor, her character, her face, I mean, whatever it was, okay? So we shouldn't go on the basis of her outward appearance, okay? On the other hand, at the time when we came across this first statement, which was a couple of pages back, so we gave an alternate explanation. That meant, you know, that she was full of freshness, green in the sense, you know, that she was just bubbling over with enthusiasm and freshness and so on. And this is the reason why physically she was attractive to him. Okay. All right.
We'll buy that.
Yeah. All right. The world doesn't depend upon this. Okay.
But don't they want to actually include Esther here as one of the beautiful
women? Yeah,
of
course.
It's important to include her.
Naturally, they wanted to include Esther because of the fact, after all, we're reading we're interpreting Megillus Esther, of course. Okay. Tanu Rabban. So since we mentioned Rachav a few moments ago, so we have another teacher concerning Rachav. Tanu Rabban, Rachav Bishmo Zinso Yoel Bekoilo, Abigail Bispirasa, and Micha Bashul Bereiyasa. There are four women mentioned over here who sinned in each of them in their own way. How so? Rachav, her sin, or in other words, or maybe the reason why she causes others to sin, is immediately present in her name. We'll discuss the name in a moment, okay? All right.
Where's the reference to sin? So.
Why do they mention it?
Well, I mean, where is the reference?
It says Zinso, okay?
Zinso,
you see the Rachel Bishmo Zinso, right?
Zinso.
Yep. Zinso means that she, literally, she sinned, she committed. Yeah, she was a harlot or something like that. You see, this is the verb that comes from the word Zona.
Yeah,
no, okay?
Yeah,
all right, right. So usually when you have the word Zinsoa, it means that she sinned. Okay? In other words, by playing the harlot or something like that. As a matter of fact, the Nevi'im, they castigate the people of Israel that, you know, they sinned against God by acting as if they were harlots. In other words, they betrayed the Rebbeinu Shalom by going after the false gods. You understand? This was the adultery that they had committed religiously. Okay? Not talking naturally. I mean, it could also have been, you know, looseness of morals, but the point is, when they are castigating the people of Israel, one of the major themes of the prophets is the fact that the people of Israel have betrayed God by lusting after idols. You understand? All right.
These are the beautiful women you're talking about now.
Well, as we'll see, one of them is Rahab, okay, since she was mentioned, okay? Then Yael. We didn't have Yael mentioned.
No, we didn't.
No, okay.
But they do mention her.
But they mention her over here. What about Yael? So the answer is that she sinned by having such a beautiful voice that the voice aroused, you know, it incited men to lust. This is the idea, okay?
Does this have anything to do with why men are not supposed to listen to women sing?
Well, it's probably tied into it's probably tied into, you know.
Well, yeah.
There's a Gemara, you know, that says this and this and this and this, and one of the things it says is Kol Be'isha Erva. In other words, the voice of a woman incites lust within the human being. Okay.
Don't listen to your wife.
To your wife, you may be a strange woman. Okay. Abigail, what did she do? Bitzchira saw. What is Bitzchira saw? By what she mentioned to David. She hinted. What did she hint to David? She said, well, if you remember, she said to him, first of all, don't commit murder, you know, and don't commit adultery, don't commit murder, you know, because her husband was still alive.
Yeah.
But she says to him, however, someday remember me. Okay, so let's remember me.
I'll be waiting for you. If my husband drops dead tomorrow, I'll wait for you.
And Michal, the daughter of Shaul, who was not mentioned either among the beautiful women, but nevertheless, Re'iyah saw. What is Re'iyah saw? It means when she saw David dancing for joy and so on, if you remember, what was her reaction?
Her reaction was that he had debased himself.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
He had debased himself, right? Right.
It
wasn't in keeping with the how a king, right, the dignity of a king to behave the way he did.
Right.
So, okay.
Pardon
me?
Because they were both daughters of kings.
Yeah, but. Yeah, correct. She was the daughter of Belshazzar, we said, right? Belshazzar. Yeah, that's what we learned several pages back. Okay. Obviously, she was also a beautiful woman, according to the one who says, Esther's name and then put in Vashti.
Right.
It's among four beautiful women. Okay. Now, here we have a very funny statement, which was also repeated in a couple of other places. Okay. It says, Rachav, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak says, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Kol ho'emer Rachav, Rachav miyad nikre. Says, whoever says Rachav, Rachav, immediately he gets an erection and he has a seminal discharge. In other words, it's so powerful is the memory.
The name itself.
what do you call it? That,
whatever.
That's
stimulation. Right, he's stimulated. Okay. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Yitzchok, he says, Hana Amina Rachav Rachav, I can say Rachav Rachav.
Well,
only possibly, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Maybe he was impotent.
So Amalei, so he answered, he said, Kika Amina Miyedo V'makira. Says, no, when I say that, I mean if somebody really knows who she is, he knows her intimately, he's familiar with her. Probably. Then, he gets excited when he says, Rachav Rachav, okay. Or when he hears somebody saying Rachav Rachav, okay. All right, now we get back to an exposition of the text. The next pasuk that they have is Mordechai Yadas Kol Asher Da'asa. Okay.
Can I ask you one?
Sure.
What was this? What part of the Megillah did this really refer to? I mean, they're trying to prove that Esther was a beautiful woman.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah, that's essentially what it was. Okay.
But then they tell her to take her out and put the Ashtiyah.
Well, okay. You have to realize again that when we are dealing with the Gemara, very often, there's like free association, so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay? One word will suddenly bring on something else. Or they want to make sure that. So they'll bring in, let's say, several different teachings, not necessarily related to each other, but because it's the same person is the author of those statements.
Right. Right.
We've had plenty of examples of that, and
that's
something in Gemara, okay? Or we'll have, let's say, different rabbinic interpretations, different authorities about the same pasuk, and they each, have a different approach to it. And so this happens. All right. For those of you who came late, I mentioned the fact that my son David called me today from Israel, and he has to have an operation in the next couple of weeks. But he gave me some good news. The good news is that my son Michael, who has been working for several years on a translation to the Medrash, to Megillas Esther, the book has finally appeared. So David...
In English, right.
English translation. So I'm dying to see
who's
the book.
Who's publishing it?
Feldheim is putting
good,
it.
Good
yeah.
publisher.
He... approached Art Scroll 2 several, maybe about a half year ago or something like that. They said it was very good, but apparently they had other plans or something like that.
Yeah, Feldheim is a very good
But Feldheim is putting it out.
Good.
Yeah.
We'll all be required to study that.
Absolutely.
Well, at least Feld 20 copies.
So I'm very, very proud. Yeah. I'm happy to hear good news among you, the fact that unfortunately. We also have people who are facing operations in the front. All right, the Medrash should help.
Will he cover this subject here?
Yeah, but it's working on the Medrash.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the Medrash Rabbah to Esther, to Megillas Esther. It's not a translation of the Gemara here, but some of these ideas will also appear in the Medrash, obviously. Okay? All right. So now, as they go, they're okay. We have reached that point in the Megillah at this moment. The last one that we talked about, if you remember, was Haman. Right?
Forgot about him.
Yeah, I know. We almost forgot because as a week goes by, and then we have these little interjections over here, and so we forget, what the trend is. But the last thing that they discussed, if you remember, was about Haman, how he got the acquiescence, the permission of Ahasuerus to slaughter all the Jews, right, and to set aside a day in order to do it, and so on. So that was the last thing that we had. And then, what is the next thing? So the next chapter, which would be chapter 4 in the Megillah, begins with the words of Mordechai Yodais Kol Asher Da'aso. Mordechai learned about everything that had taken place. Okay? So the question is, what specifically did he learn? Okay. So Omar Gova Haman Meyachashveirosh Ushmuel Omar Govar Malka Ilo Imalka Tator. Okay. Which means as follows. Rav said that Mordechai said, okay, the best thing would be if I would simply quote to you what the pasuk is, okay? Pasuk begins, Mordechai yadaz kol asher na'asor, that Mordechai learned about everything that had happened, and then it says, Vayikra Mordechai is begodov, that he tore his garments, right? Vayilbash sakva efer, and he put on sackcloth, put ashes on his head, right? Vayetzei b'soich ha'ir, and he went out into the midst of the city, no longer in the royal palace, but he went into the middle of the city, where obviously Jewish neighborhood was, okay? Vayetzak ze'oka g'dayla mara, and he cried a loud and a bitter wail, okay, wailing, okay? So the question is then, what did he say to the Jews at that point? See, because the Megillah doesn't say exactly what it says, it simply says, of course, I mean, we can understand what he's saying, so, okay, no, tomorrow, right? This could also be, you know, that the, you know, he said, oy vey, he said, we need help, you know. But nevertheless, this interpretation means that he actually he went around the Jewish neighborhood, and this is what he said to the Jews. What did he say to them? Firstly, one interpretation is that he said, Grova Haman Me'achashverosh, which means that Haman is even higher, in other words, mightier or something like that, than Achashverosh. In what way? If you remember, as far as Achashverosh is concerned, the idea of killing off all the Jews, this had to be sold to him. Who sold it to him? Of course, the answer is Haman. So that, therefore, in this respect, Haman actually was more powerful than Achashverosh. Okay? So that's one opinion. This is Rav's opinion.
He was certainly influencing him, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Then, Shmuel, who, you know, you always have Rav and Shmuel, they're always arguing with each other. So Shmuel said, this is what he said. Govar Malko Yilo Min Malko Tator. It says, the king on high is mightier than the king below. In other words, the Abdeinu Shalaylam, who is the king on high, will eventually prove to be more mighty than the king below, who is Achashverosh. In other words, the Abdeinu Shalaylam has the power to bring about a change, you know, in the fortune that had been decreed by the king down below. Then, what happens? So we know from the Megillah, you see, they skip some of these things over here, but they assume that you know the Megillah, okay? What is the next thing that happened? It's written, you know, that he came and he appeared in the courtyard in order to talk to Esther, right? And to get her, you know, to plead on behalf of the people of Israel. Now, when he sent word to Esther, you know, that things were very bad for the Jews, then what happened at that particular moment? So this is the next one. It says, what is Chalchal HaMalka? Now, the question is, what is Chalchal? Normally, I'll tell you, I think that some of these okay. What is Chalchal really means, in this particular case, that she was in pain. She was altogether, you know, confused with terrible feelings, you know, and so on.
The root is chil.
Right.
Fear.
We have, okay, the expression, for example, is chil kayoleda, which means the pain that a woman who is giving birth has. So obviously it's a great pain, okay? So in other words, she experienced the same pain as if she were in the middle of childbirth, okay? But they give another interpretation. It says, my batis chalchal. What does it mean, batis chalchal? So Omar Rav, so Rav said, you know what happened? She pierced the needle. She was so overcome with trembling that that particular she got her period, okay? I mean, you know, it happens sometimes and the woman has a period,
that's right,
not at the regular time, but because of circumstances. So this is his interpretation. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Amar, he had a different one. He says, Shehutz Rechol Nidikodeho. means that she had diarrhea.
That's it.
In other words, she got sick and she had diarrhea. Okay? And we know that that happens too, you know, that people are frightened and that happens.
What's that?
All this would account for the Venus.
Maybe that's what Susan said, yeah. She lacks blood.
I'm telling you.
We're having a deep pleasure in this, really. It's a deep pleasure. It really is. It's an indication of how beautiful that is,
right,
that it can elicit such response.
That's correct. The fact is that, as you see, it isn't just philosophy. The Gemara is—it's a real down-to-earth experience. They know what happens to people, and so that is what they're saying. I simply want to say that, but this Chalkal also suggests something that we say every time that we make a bracha Shayotza. What do we say?
Yeah.
We say that the Beinu Shalom created with us, right? The Kovim, Chalulim, Chalulim. So it means he gave us all kinds of openings and all kinds of things that open, things that close, and so on and so forth, you see. And we have, we have intestines, and we have other things, you know, and a stomach and esophagus and so on, these things. And we know that if anything should go wrong, then Chas v'Shalom, exactly. So this is why every time that we have a normal function, we give praise to the Rebbeinu Shalom that we're able to function normally. Right.
Are women supposed to say that? Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Know that.
Yeah, when you go to the bathroom, you have to do it.
I don't know. Is it posted in a women's bathroom, too?
Yeah.
Posted in a women's bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I've never written
that.
Okay. All right.
Well, now that's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
I wondered about that. Are we to assume, I'm assuming that you don't say a bracha in the bathroom normally.
No,
to remove yourself.
Right.
So are we to assume that the little anteroom...
The anteroom is considered kosher because there's a door that closes, right.
There is a door.
Yeah, it's a door that's kept closed over there, right.
Yeah.
So it's a separate room.
Yeah.
That's the reason.
Technically, you can have your palace on the anteroom.
Yeah. Park it over there. Don't bring it in into the bathroom proper. Okay. Right, right. Yeah. All right. Then.
You say that.
Yeah. Okay. So then it's written in the Megillah, Vatikra Esther Hasach. Okay, that Esther called unto Hasach. And who was Hasach? He was like the chamberlain who was serving her. Okay? Hasach.